missing this.
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power.
As potent as Rashford and Fernandes post-lockdown.
Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Now you're welcome back. Just looking at team news in, Neymar starts, Mbappe on the bench for PSG this evening against Atalanta. And to discuss more so the Atalanta side of things, we have Roy Smith, who's written a fantastic piece in the New York Times. Roy, thanks for joining us.
Not a bother. Thanks for having me.
So, look, your piece, I think, caught the imagination a little bit today. Most of us are still kind of in the midst of all this thing, but remember from what feels like a long time ago now, the picture of army trucks taking bodies away from Bergamo. And that is Atalanta. That is the place we are talking about here. And they find themselves in this strange situation as they reemerge from the horrors. There's a touch of fairy tale about the football side of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been the field of story of the year, really, prior to February, ultimately. You know, it's this team with a budget, a playing budget that's kind of average for the championship, where I think the entire squad cost less than Neymar, where, you know, the wages that they're on are less than Neymar earns in a year. All these things that aren't really meant to happen in the kind of the unequal landscape of elite European football, Atalanta are doing them, and they're doing them in this really kind of idiosyncratic style, because they aren't a fairy tale built on resolute defence and grizzled kind of centre backs knocking everything away and riding their luck. They attack. They can't really do anything else. Gasperini, their coach, has got this edict that he doesn't want his players to pass the ball sideways at all, which to me is a little bit extreme, but obviously makes them great to watch. So they have all these kind of high-scoring games. They're regarded as the most attractive side in Italy. They've defied the odds now for 4 years, really, finishing third this year. I think they finished fourth last year and seventh before that. This is this wonderful story. And then in February, the day after they beat Valencia 4-1 in the first leg of the last 16, you have the first coronavirus case in Codogno, which is a town kind of an hour south. And then the next day in Alzano Lombardo, you have another case, the second case in Italy. And within a few weeks, the whole of Lombardy, and seemingly centred on Bergamo, is just full of horror and grief and fear, because it was the first real outbreak. I spoke to the mayor while I was in Bergamo, and he said it was the first real outbreak in the Western world, and it was the first real outbreak in a democracy. And I think that's why it struck so many of us, and it still lingers with so many of us, despite the fact that, you know, what the entire world has been through is going through. You know, in Britain, I'm in Britain, and we've had more deaths from the coronavirus than Italy has, and, you know, by quite a lot of metrics, we've been worse hit than the Italians. But still, I think Bergamo lingers in your memory, because it was that first vision of this is what's coming to us, and this is how bad it can be. And that is sadly now what Bergamo's kind of known for.
Mm. They were so utterly unprepared for it. I mean, we saw the footage from hospitals. It was popping up on Sky News and everywhere. We saw the army trucks. It was doomsday stuff, and the world was looking on in horror. That game, February 19th at the San Siro, when they were brilliant against Valencia, as you mentioned, you spoke to the mayor, he calls that game the last day of total ignorance. It was the last day when we did not worry. Interestingly, one of the doctors, the chief doctor in the hospital in Bergamo, described the game as a biological bomb. I mean, it certainly wasn't best practice in hindsight.
No, and I think it's that was kind of what made me I want to do the story, because it's a fascinating subject. It's a great story on one level, obviously, just what they've achieved on the pitch is fantastic, and it's an incredibly tragic and important story in another, because of what happened to Bergamo. But I think the role that football played to me was really interesting, because from the outside looking in, it did feel as though football was kind of blamed for what happened in Bergamo and in sort of Lombardy as a whole. And there were several doctors who came out and said, look, this was an important vector for contagion. I think that was the chief pneumatologist at the Pope John the 23rd hospital, the main hospital in Bergamo. I think a doctor in Milan said that it was kind of the event that had triggered everything. But speaking to people in Bergamo, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. They're really keen to say, look, nobody knew. No, there was no clue as 40,000 fans made their way down the motorway from Bergamo to Milan, which is about half an hour, 40 minutes, they did not know there was the coronavirus was in northern Italy. They had no idea. And the mayor said, look, as far as we were concerned that night, the coronavirus was something happening in China, which is how we all felt. And they're really keen to kind of, they obviously common sense dictates that getting 40,000 people together in a stadium, and then, as the mayor said, kind of all the people watching together at home and in bars in Bergamo, that will have accelerated things. That will have enabled the disease to spread faster. But the disease was already in Italy, and there's no sense of responsibility for the team or for football in general in Bergamo. And that was one thing that I was really interested to find out, is kind of how do you reflect on this team that you're simultaneously really proud of, but is now associated indelibly with this sort of sequence of tragic events and these kind of horrifying few months. But the way they see the team is quite different to what I was expecting. It's always quite hard as a journalist to accept that your preconceived ideas might be wrong. We like our preconceived ideas. You've kind of thought of intros around them, and that's kind of what you want to happen. But the way they looked at the team is, more than anything, it's kind of a symbol for the way the city might be able to recover during the lockdown and during the height of the pandemic. The ultras in particular, but also quite a lot of the organised fan groups, were really important in arranging help. So the ultras put the word out to help build a field hospital in the space of 10 days. They've donated €60,000 to the main hospital to help pay for PPE. There's been kind of quite a lot of gestures of solidarity with doctors, with key workers who've helped the city through it. I think that there are, it sounds really saccharine and cheesy, but I think it's at times like this that football actually becomes quite an important way for us to express these things that we all want to express, because it provides a ready-made network, a kind of pre-existing network that we can help through. It kind of directs our energies and our emotions a little bit, I think. And now that the team's in the, you know, they've got PSG in, what, 20 minutes' time, the biggest game in Atalanta's history, and the way that is kind of seen in the city is this is a symbol now to the rest of the world that as the mayor said, that Bergamo's not just COVID, it's not just the capital of COVID, it's also the place where Atalanta are. And that's a really important kind of image to project to the rest of the world, that there is more to Bergamo than what happened in February and March. But also he said that to people in the city, it's quite a compelling story, quite a powerful story about what you can achieve, because Atalanta should not be in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They don't have the money to do it. They don't have the reputation to do it. They're not part of the established elite, but they've done it. And that, at a time like this, is quite a potent message.
Further to your point, the mayor said of the game against Valencia, it's not about what happened that night. That game was the 19th. The first confirmed case was the 20th. The virus was already here. So they are absolutely not trying to link Atalanta or blame Atalanta in any way. That was very clear from your piece. And that jumped out at me as well, because I think in other respects, something like Cheltenham, for instance, may always be, or will for a long time be, associated with furthering the spread of this thing or increasing the pace of contagion. 3,000 deaths around the city, Rory, and 17,000 in the Lombardy region as well. Did the people that you spoke to for the piece offer up anything which struck you about that experience and what they were going through at the time?
Well, it was obvious. Yeah, it was harrowing. Everyone said that there were days of grief, just days and weeks of constant grief and fear. And what I've got to admit, what really struck me was the first time I'd been abroad since lockdown. Obviously, just we haven't been able to travel. Normally, when you kind of go and do stories like that about teams that are kind of taking Europe by storm, or about interesting coaches, or the stories that we do quite a lot of, which are the ones about kind of what football means to a place, you kind of walk around, and because you're secretly enjoying yourself, because you tend to be in quite nice places and it's a bit different, it's quite interesting, you're kind of looking for what journalists kind of brought, what we all kind of refer to as colour, but it's basically just stuff that you notice. And the stuff that I kept noticing was the hand sanitizing, the masks, the fact that, you know, you were only allowed one person in the shop at a time. And it really brought home to me the universality of it, that Italy's not kind of an alien territory. You know, it's quite familiar to quite a lot of us. And, it, you know, in many ways, it's a lot of kind of Western streets kind of look the same, and they all sell the same stuff, and a lot of the shops are the same and all that. But it's the fact that all these things are completely true there and here. I think I found that really interesting, that your kind of journalistic eye is drawn to these things that you still think secretly are strange, but then you realise that's what it's like at home as well. And it kind of reminded me, and again, this maybe is a very obvious thought dressed up as profundity, for which I apologise. But like, it just kind of reminded me that what we've been through across the world really is kind of similar for a lot of people, that, you know, all the bits of the new normal that we're kind of wrestling with are kind of globalized and universal. And I hadn't really put my finger on that. I was expecting Birdemo to feel very different. And there were elements of it that were quite startling. So that everyone wears masks. And obviously, I don't know what it's like in Ireland, but certainly in Britain, we appear to have turned a fairly obvious safety measure into a culture war thing. And there's people who refuse to wear masks. The Italians aren't like that. Or certainly in Bergamo, it's not like that because of what the city went through, and because of what the city saw itself go through. That people wear masks in the street when you're not being told to wear masks when you're walking in the street, but people will wear masks in the street. Everyone's really kind of respectful of social distancing. Everyone's really conscious of kind of how they're behaving. And I think that leapt out at me, that the intensity of what Bergamo lived through probably defines the reaction to kind of what's going on now. But a lot of it is the same stuff that we're all having to deal with. And that for some reason, that just really hit home to me, that, you know, you get on a plane, it's 2,500 miles away, whatever, and you realize that a lot of the stuff that they're going through is exactly the same as what we're going through, and that this has been a truly kind of universal experience.
Mm. We haven't turned the mask thing into a culture war as such, but there is just a degree of, can't be bothered. I'm not sure what's worse.
I genuinely, of all the things that baffle me, which are plentiful, I just don't get it. Like, it's just wearing a mask. It's not hard. It just isn't a big deal to me at all. And there'll come a point, I think, certainly in Britain and Ireland, where, you know, the weather turns and you're quite glad of the extra warmth, to be perfectly honest.
So it really just is the most extraordinary backdrop for the most important game in this football club's history, isn't it? And they're up against PSG as well, which almost represents everything in football that people increasingly dislike. We were just saying before you came on, Rory, Damien Delaney's here in studio as well. PSG have completed their fourth domestic treble in 6 years, before the first of which there had never been a domestic treble in France. And frankly, not many people care all that much. There is a real degree of hollowness to the whole thing. For them, it's Champions League or bust.
Yeah, it's a club that is obsessed with winning this individual tournament. That's all that seems to matter. And I think that's not just true of PSG. I think that's true of, to an extent, Manchester City, although I think the fans of Man City are still kind of really focused on the Premier League. I still get the impression that's what they really care about. But certainly Juve, Bayern, Real Madrid and Barcelona, this is the only thing they care about. And I really don't think that's a healthy way to approach football for them as much as anything else, because, you know, they've had these incredible seasons where, you know, they get to watch these incredible players, three of those clubs, not so much Barcelona. And yet none of it means anything to them. It doesn't seem to bring, certainly the people at the top of the clubs, any great pleasure. I suspect that to PSG fans, winning the lead is still a source of pleasure. But I think that the way that we're allowing those achievements to be downgraded is really damaging, because, you know, we've already seen Sarri lose his job for just winning the Serie A title. Mm. Niko Kovac went at Bayern despite winning the Serie A title. I think he went 4 months after he'd won it. Valverde went at Barcelona, obviously, after winning La Liga last season. This is not a healthy model for running football clubs or for running football leagues or for a sport to kind of buy into, because it mitigates against long-term planning. It mitigates against sensible development. And, you know, they have these hundreds of millions of euros in budget and they don't use them sensibly. And it's a slightly kind of trite link. But if you look at the way that Atalanta work, there are two really clear philosophies behind what Atalanta do. One is the playing style from Gasperini, and the other is the way the club works in the market, which is kind of it's almost an inversion of what a lot of teams do. Atalanta's plan is very much to bring up young players so they can sell them and buy older ones. And the older ones tend to be people like Martin Darun, who was at Middlesbrough a couple of years ago, Papu Gomez, who'd never really kind of made an impression at a major club, Duvan Zapata, who's their record signing, but he's been kind of around. Napoli signed him a few years ago, and he's been at Udinese. He's kind of been around Italy for a while. Luis Muriel, who's turned into a bit of a journeyman. They kind of go in, they look in markets that others don't. They look at ages that others don't. And the way that they've been able to kind of fast-track their way to, yeah, the top four in Serie A, by having a fairly clear idea, and it's difficult balance to strike, that it feels to me, and maybe this is a sign of my age, of being a fan of my generation, it feels to me like that is how football should reward teams. It should reward the teams that work well. But increasingly, it seems to reward the teams that just have the most money, and regardless of how they work, the punishment for not being bright about running your club appears to be that you just win your domestic league, and that's not quite right to me.
Can I, Rory, it's Damien here. Can I just take you back to your point there? Because I tend to disagree with you with your point that you were making about Valverde, Kovacic, and Sarri. I think those guys were well aware when they interviewed for the jobs that they were told it's Champions League because we give you enough money that you should be strolling to the Bundesliga or the Serie A title. A lot of these owners have huge egos, and the priority is the Champions League because, you know, PSG's owners want to say that they have a team that's Champions of Europe because it is the ultimate club football competition. So I don't think it's in any way that they're belittling the league by saying that, you know, you're getting fired for winning the league. I just think they're told in the job interview from the get-go, the priority for us here is almost certainly Champions League football.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, to be fair, that they are being told that if you don't perform in the Champions League, that's you done. I think each individual case is a bit different. You know, Sarri, it clearly hadn't worked at Juve. You could see that coming. Kovac, by all accounts, you know, the players were unhappy with his methods, with his kind of his approach, and there was a clash coming. I think he'd lost certainly kind of key figures in the dressing room, and people like Thomas Müller and Manuel Neuer, they just weren't having him anymore. Valverde was a really strange one because the players seemed to quite like Valverde, and he had kind of met the requirements in terms of domestic football. And, you know, it's not like they were going out of the Champions League in the group stages. They were getting, obviously, they had the two turnarounds against Roma and Liverpool, and that I think was probably what did for him in the end. But there just seems to me to be that's too fine a margin for a manager to say you have to win the Champions League is too fine a margin to be thinking about. I could understand if the basic aim was, look, get to the semi-finals. Our budgets mean we should be in the semi-finals of the Champions League. And if you're not in the semi-finals of the Champions League, then maybe we talk about how you've been doing. And it might, you know, that might depend. If you're Bayern Munich and you run into Barcelona in the quarterfinals, maybe you have to kind of hold your hands up a little bit and say, all right, that bad luck in the draw or whatever. But I think to say if you don't win the Champions League, you will have failed is a really dangerous way to run the club, because it means you're making yourself hostage to fortune, and you don't end up changing, and in the course of changing, you'll get yourself in a situation like Barcelona are in now, where the squad kind of makes no sense because they've just added players sort of randomly to it effectively, because they thought, well, we need to sign someone like that, so let's sign that. There's no kind of overall vision of where the club wants to be or what the team wants to be, and I think that then makes winning the Champions League even harder in years to come.
I think those situations kind of are born out of the desperation to win the Champions League, that they just get good players on the market, let's just take him. And the coaches, that's not really their responsibility anymore. It's owners and directors of football and kind of committees that sign players. And the coach is saying, we're giving you all the tools available to you. Another coach might disagree and say, no, I never asked for these players. A little bit like what Mourinho had at Man United, where he thought, you know, you gave me certain players that I didn't ask for, or, you know, you gave me a profile of player that I wasn't necessarily looking for. But I think it's perfectly fine, because I think if you interview for a job and the first thing they say is we want you to win the Champions League and you still take the job, well, then you're taking on that responsibility. Those clubs are striving to be the best in Europe, probably for commercial reasons and for, you know, marketing issues, and they want to be top dogs in Europe. So I don't see, I know you think it might be a touch dangerous, but I don't, to be honest. I think it's fine. If these guys want to go and say, listen, any job you go for in the morning, if I go for a job interview in the morning, they're going to say, well, here's what we require from you. I think it's unfair if they say to you, look, just win the league and get the semi-final of the Champions League and you fulfil that, and then they fire you. I think that's a touch unfair. But I think if they let you know from the get-go, Champions League are bust and you still take the job, well, then I think you're kind of responsible for it yourself.
Yeah.
You get a payoff as well. It's hard to feel desperately sorry for any of them. You know, they've all kind of, Damien's completely right. Like they knew what they were getting into bed with, effectively. Mm.
As a manager, it's definitely fair enough. I mean, you can't complain. I guess it's just in terms of a way to run a club, it's pretty volatile. And given that only one team can win, you just kind of wonder, well, is this really the best way to do things? And I don't know. I think the jury's out a little bit. I'm not so sure it feels like the best way to run a club. It certainly looks like, I mean, it's basically the European Super League. That's kind of the domestic league is kind of like, you know, win it, but like it doesn't matter. We're focused on one thing and one thing only. On tonight's game, then, Roy, before we let you go, so Gasperini and this not passing the ball sideways thing is interesting. I'm hoping that's a literal rule to the players, and if I see it happen once this evening, I'm gonna call foul. We don't have much to go on in terms of PSG's recent form for obvious reasons. Atalanta have done quite well post-lockdown. What are you expecting tonight?
Goals, effectively. Good. I think I'd be standard if there aren't goals. That normally, well, everyone knows the rule that you expect goals, you get a goalless draw. But I think Atalanta don't really have it in them to defend. I think PSG's, the balance of their side, it looks like Tuchel from the lineups has made a little bit of a tweak just to try and maybe control Atalanta's press to kind of limit the space on the flanks, I guess. But I think that both teams want to play on the front foot. PSG are dangerous on the break. Atalanta are dangerous on the break. Atalanta don't mind having the ball. PSG love having the ball. There should be goals. I think PSG's class will tell, ultimately. I think, you know, that in games like this, Damien will know much better than I do, but in games like this, individual quality often is the kind of the difference maker. But certainly, if PSG aren't on it, and if they are a little bit rusty, which is possible, it could equally be that Atalanta are tired. That's equally possible. If PSG are rusty, then Atalanta will punish them because they are relentless. They will just come for them. They won't be cowed by their reputation. And to be honest, I think that to some extent, they probably feel as though they've got a bit of a cause behind them, which is quite a powerful thing. You know, I think there's 13 different nationalities or something in the squad. They all stayed in Bergamo during lockdown. Quite a few of them did their lockdown at Zingonia, the club's training ground, which was quite an important kind of symbol to the city that the team are not just kind of mercenaries who happen to play for a club in Bergamo. Like they identify with the city. And I think given everything that's happened, this isn't an Atalanta team that needs any extra inspiration or extra motivation. But I think that might be in the back of their minds. And also that, you know, they lost their first three games in the Champions League and they qualified. They smashed Valencia, scored four against them home and away. They're not really a team that's likely to look at PSG and be worried about their reputations. So I suspect PSG will get through. I suspect that individual quality will tell, but I don't think they're going to have a lot of fun doing it. I think it might be quite a stressful evening for them.
Okay, well listen, people can check out your piece on the New York Times website if they haven't already. It's a great read. Rory, as ever, thanks a million. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Rory.
Thanks for having me.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, as potent as Rashford and Fernandes post lockdown.
Gamble responsibly. CWE.net.
Now you're welcome, Max. So 38 minutes into the game, Atalanta 1, PSG 0. That is where we are after 38 minutes. Damien Delaney in studio as well. There's a text in from Ed earlier on saying, "I could listen to this fella all day. Great knowledge and great delivery." Doesn't say who it's about.
Yeah, I was going to say. It's definitely you, Joe.
Definitely not. Keith Andrews is over on Virgin Media this evening. Champions League is back. They're having their festival of football, every game live on Virgin Media Television and Virgin Media Sport. Keith Andrews, in advance of this game, saying it would be embarrassing if PSG were to lose tonight. How is it?
It will be, yeah, because this side of the draw has been kinder to them. There's no doubt about that. Getting back up to speed, not playing domestically, isn't ideal. That's you just cannot get away with that. The injuries that they have and the slight worries. But you're right, in terms of budgets, you know, the whole Atalanta squad.
They've only played two competitive games in the last 5 months. That's compared to Atalanta's 13. Will that make any kind of difference?
Well, you could say there's good and bad in that. We've seen teams through this, through the Europa League as well. The French team, Lyon, it didn't bother them. They were well up for it. They looked fresh. So I you know, they haven't had matches. They're two very competitive cup matches and a few friendlies, but they also have a bit of freshness too.
So that was the lads' verdict in advance of this game. 38 minutes in, what are you seeing?
PSG are neat and tidy because they've obviously got technically very good players. Neymar looks like he's in the mood. He's had the best chance of the whole game. He went through one-on-one right down the middle of the Atalanta defence and somehow just absolutely made a hash of the chance.
It was a dreadful effort.
It was, yeah. I think he tried to bend it but didn't get the bend and the ball went straight and it missed the goal by a good 4 or 5 yards. But I mean, look, Atalanta look battle-hardened. They look like a team that have been playing competitive football recently. With the exception of Neymar, PSG haven't really threatened. Their goalkeeper hasn't made any saves. Neymar had that chance. He also had a shot from distance after a beautiful nutmeg on Pasalic, who scored the goal for Atalanta. But look, PSG need to get themselves going. They need to start offering more of a threat, more penetration, putting Atalanta under sustained pressure, because at the minute it's kind of sporadic attacks. But this team looks so well organised, well drilled, and as I said, battle hardened.
Brian and Keith there were talking about the extent to which PSG may be feeling the effects of not having played very much. And you said Atalanta are battle-hardened. I would presume it's unlikely that as the game goes on, PSG will become more battle-hardened. They'll surely tire a bit more than Atalanta will, or would you expect them to come into it a bit?
I think they'll come into it. I think the way the trainings are set up now with the training loads, they can prepare you for this. The only thing they're missing is that little bit of match sharpness. Like I said, being the trenches, the speed of things happening now, that's what you can't replicate. Mm. The press that Atalanta are coming with, no matter what you do in training, you can't replicate that. They'll get their eye in very, very quickly. I was watching the Inter Milan Leverkusen game. It was similar. Leverkusen came into the game on Monday night in the second half. They'll get their eye in, but the key here is Atalanta have got their noses in front, and they look ripe at the minute to go and get a second goal. They're playing extremely well. They're doing what Atalanta do. As we speak here comes Sarabia. Yeah, just a ball across the face, a goal comes to nothing. But look. PSG, I wouldn't go so.
It's a warning sign, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's sporadic. You know, their ventures into the Atalanta, it's not sustained, and they need to get some sustained pressure to really move Atalanta around. But Atalanta looking extremely comfortable, confident on the ball. They're passing it equally as well, if not better than PSG, and they're showing more penetration.
And we talked pretty much with Roy Smith, and he was, you know, saying that the manager Gasperini doesn't want them passing the ball sideways, let alone backwards, and it's free-flowing attacking football. Mm. Obviously, look, not passing the ball sideways is not meant literally, but that is the mindset. Have they lived up to that?
Yeah, absolutely. They look forward and they run forward. And it's two things you want from a football team. You know, sometimes you can get lulled in, and PSG are doing it to a certain extent, where they're having the ball in their kind of the middle third and their defensive third, where they are just, oh, here comes Neymar. Oh, my goodness. Neymar with a fantastic effort there, and he's missed the goal by a long way, let's just say, a mistake there from Atalanta. But, oh my God, a big crossfield pass, and they left the ball short, and Neymar goes through. Keeper's off his line. Neymar of all might have chipped him there, but he doesn't. He takes an extra touch, hits it from the maybe penalty spot over on the left-hand side and misses it by a long, long way.
Balloon slices it high into the sky with his left foot. So but, that was a big chance.
Yeah, it was. But just to get back to the Atalanta point, he probably instills that just because he doesn't want to be their first option, because sometimes it's the easiest thing to do. When you get the ball, we retain possession. And on paper, it looks like you have a lot of possession. He said, no. Play forward and run forward. And if you do that and you give the ball away, I'll be happy. Yeah. I think he'd be happy if a guy gave the ball away trying to find a forward pass as opposed to, having 29 completed passes in
looking
the first
after
half
his stats.
From the left back going back to the centre back, it's a mindset that he's trying to instill in his players, and my God, they seem to have bought into it, because they're full of energy and they're extremely well disciplined as well.
I do hasten to add, since we came on the air in the last couple of minutes and just talked about how good Atalanta are, PSG have been all over them. But that's I'm just throwing that caveat in there.
I did say they'd get their eye in eventually.
I just don't want a listener texting in 15 minutes when PSG have scored going, where did that come from? Yeah. They have actually got a grip in this game the last 5, 6, 7 minutes.
Yeah.
That was Keith Andrews and Brian Kerr on Virgin Media Sport tonight. You can check out virginmedia.ie for broadband and entertainment bundles. Also this morning, OTBAM, the Cyrus Christie interview has made headlines everywhere. It was in Sky Sports News this evening, I saw. He was detailing, as you'll hear in conversation with Cher, abuse he received from Irish fans on international duty after training in Dublin. Just have a listen.
You know, Cyrus, you're not Irish, but I born in England or whatever it might be, but I don't see the likes of Richard Keogh, or I didn't see the likes of Harry Ott, I didn't see the other lads that Kieran Clarke or whoever it might have been that were born in England. No one was saying that same stuff to them, but me, David McGoldrick, Callum Robinson, the three black lads, it's coming at us that same way. We're the ones that are getting spoke about like that, and you know, that's just one little minor issue, but people won't realise that, and because they're not in our position. So, you know, I had to be the unfortunate one that scored the own goal. I didn't mean to, you know, it hit my trailer leg when I went to go block it, and you know, that it is what it is. And then I've took the blame for that. And it happened when I first joined up as well. It even happened one time at the training ground from fans that were standing outside there. They were kids, do you know what I mean? So it happens. There's a lot of systematic racism, and you know, until people of all different cultures realise that, especially white people, because it doesn't really happen to them, and you know, until they pick up and it realises, and like I said, I think their voice is always bigger than everyone else's, and if James McLean hadn't said it, I don't think people would have took as much notice, and it's always the, oh, well, you're blaming it on a bad performance, or...
There was an incident at the training ground. Was this at an Ireland training ground? So it would have been in Dublin, probably.
yeah, this was in Dublin. This was one of my first couple of times when I was obviously new in. Yeah, it was just, we obviously people outside. Obviously after training, we signed the staff, there's people there, and obviously someone just, they come up to me and was kind of, they just basically, obviously, yeah, it was something racist or whatever they said, and it was a bit shocking. And then obviously the other lads refused to sign some of the stuff because there was a few of the others were there and had seen it, and I was in shock.
And sorry, did you say it was a kid or was it a teenager or?
Oh, it was a kid, yeah. That's why it shocked me. It's come from a kid, so as might be, you don't want to blame the kid. So it's obviously coming from the parents, in my mind anyway. I mean, you may think different, but from the kid saying that. And then what shocked me the most is that obviously he's there with the teacher. The teacher didn't say nothing. She allowed it. Unless you educate these people, then it's just going to keep happening. And that's what I find scary. You know, you have older generations and, you know, they're so stubborn that they're not going to change their mind, because if you've been on this earth for 50, 60 years, you know, it's hard to change someone's opinion. But you've got the kids that understand what is going on in this world, and, you know, they're able and open to see what's happened. They're growing up in a different time now, and that shouldn't be the case. You know, they're open to so much education, Google and books and libraries, whatever it might be. So for a teacher who's in a high position, who's meant to be maybe, say, non-biased, I don't know if that's the right kind of phrase to maybe say. So, you know, for her to not say anything was, which was what shocked me even more. So, you know, it's a kid, right? I'm sure he's got enough longevity in his life to understand where he went wrong there, and hopefully 20 years from now he still doesn't have the same opinion.
So that was Cyrus Christie on OTBM this morning. The interview is about half an hour long. It's well worth checking out. You'll get it on the new app. Just search OTB Sports in your app store and you'll get us there, or any of our social channels as well. It's been podcasted too, and he talks about various things. I mean, initially when he's talking about people talking about him and Dave McGoldrick, for instance, he's referring there to tweets which happened to Christie after the Denmark game, and then he talks about that incident at one of his first training sessions in Dublin for Ireland. And the way he tells it, Dame Delaney, is just so grim. You know, I'm not surprised to use the word shock, because I would think when you're oversigning stuff from some kids who are there with their teacher, it's just about the last thing you're expecting, to be singled out like that, you know. And, you know, he said in the interview he's had racist abuse all his life, stuff like that all his life. And what jumped out at me more than anything was, if that's what Christie, Republic of Ireland footballer, huge status in front of kids, is getting in that environment, I mean, what chance do people all around the country in less celebrated environments have to put up with? It's a terrible thing, you know, and I didn't know that incident had happened. I'd say very few people did. And it's really dreadful. The kid is modelling his behaviour on someone. Lots of people I'm sure he can model his behaviour on, but the teacher not to jump in and go, whoa, 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 whoa. Mm. What's just happened here?
Yeah, that's the most frightening bit. You know, Cyrus talks there about education, and I think that is the key. And him raising this issue or highlighting this issue has got people talking about it now. Mm. And maybe a lot of people up and down the country are kind of going to their kids and saying, you know, everyone assumes that it's coming from the parents. It might not necessarily be that, you know. Now, obviously, the parents have to monitor what they're doing on social media. But, you know, it could be coming from another kid in his classroom who his parents might potentially be like that. So, I mean, it's up to every parent to sit down. You know, if the parents, it's not coming from the parents, you need to sit down and educate your children. Mm. And not just educate that this word is bad and this word is good. You need to educate them on why a certain word is bad, you know, depending on the child's age. But you need to kind of imprint that in their memory, that here's the connotations of this word, or here's the history of where these words come from, or this behaviour. That's why, you know, people speak like that. And then it'll hopefully educate the child not to do it. And when he hears somebody else doing it, then he'll think that's not right, okay? So it's not okay. It's not okay to just assume, you know, oh, well, we're not racist, so my kid's not going to be racist. You know, they're out, you know, school, or they're with their friends, or they're on social media, or they're watching certain things. So it's great that he's raised it, and maybe he has a light bulb will go off in a lot of people's minds, and we'll sit their kids down and say, hang on a second now, you know, we assumed that you weren't speaking like that, but you might be.
No, absolutely. Like I said, you can get the full interview. It's about 36, 37 minutes long. It's well worth having a listen to. And look, needless to say, experienced it in football. Social media hasn't helped. I'm sure you've been in grounds where you've heard it. I'm sure you've been in dressing rooms where language has been average or stuck in the dark ages. Your football is a part of society and it's in society. So I'm sure you've come across it. And football grounds are this weird place as well, where, you know, people feel they can get away with things.
Yeah, but I mean, look, you go back as far as the 80s, you know, and you think players like John Barnes and Bananas being thrown on the pitch and stuff, you know. So a lot of kids at that time grew up witnessing that. And they're still going to football matches now because they're in their 40s, 50s or 60s. And sometimes they might lose a run themselves and it just comes out, you know. Mm. So we need to just eradicate that type of behaviour. I've seen and heard some pretty horrific things, not weekly, you know, but I remember at Crystal Palace, Wilfred Zaha used to get dogs abuse because he was a player that would wind up opposition fans and stuff. But he got racially abused several times, you know, and I heard it as well, something to the point where I'm like, I'm speaking to Wilf, like saying, you know, don't get upset now, you know, it's horrific, we'll deal with it afterwards, you know, just keep your head in the game and don't lose your temper and get involved with those fans and stuff, you know, but, you know, we can deal with the proper channels after the game. But it's not nice to listen to, you know.
And all these years on, does any part of you think, actually, we should have just stopped the game? Like, why should Wilfred have, you know, that message of don't let them get to you and, you know, take it on the chin. And I wonder, should the, because increasingly there is the option now officially to walk off the pitch.
Absolutely. You know? And that's with the with time passing, you know. I mean, I'm sure there's times Wilfred did want to walk off the pitch.
I'd say so, yeah.
And think, I'm not happy with this, but like.
The football environment at that time was don't let them get to you.
Exactly, you know. I mean, the society seems to have changed now. You know, where this has become so unacceptable, like, you know, not that it ever was acceptable,
I know what you mean.
But there was an element of like, you know, it's just
don't
some
get
fools,
you
know what I mean? They don't mean it, you know, they're just trying to throw you off your game, that type of behaviour. But I think there has been a monumental shift now in culture, in everything, in this last 12 months, and players are actually highlighting it. It's a great thing that they are. Mm. You know, Cyrus Christie today, you know, Wilfred's come out in the past, and I think it was a young Aston Villa fan was sending him some hateful stuff recently. I think the boy was 12 and the West Midlands police dealt with it. But the more it gets highlighted, the more we can educate these young kids. But look, you did hear some pretty horrific stuff. I think in the changing room, you did hear some, I mean, it's racism, but it was more outdated stereotypes and outdated words, you know.
Right.
You know, how you refer to certain people and things like that. And you did hear it and you kind of look at the guy and he's older, he's from a different generation and you're kind of going, you can't really say that anymore, you know what I mean? Those words aren't acceptable in our society because they do have negative connotations that come with them. So, but look, the more this happens and the Black Lives Matter movement, the more it comes out, the more we're getting educated and the more kids we can save. Because as Cyrus said, there are some people you're never going to save. They're set. So the kids growing up today are the ones, and hopefully, when that generation becomes of age, there'll be less in the generation coming after that as well.
Yeah, we'll take a short break. Atalanta 1-0 up at half time now against PSG. It's gone half time. So Atalanta 1, PSG 0. We've got a busy football show. Myself, Damien, keep an eye on this game. Pat Nem's going to join us live as well. We'll chat to him about the European football generally. So that's all on the way.
The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. We love the beautiful game more than Olivia Giroud loves the near post. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to edit and I can't.
Well, do it then.
Come see again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
I was, it wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
PSG manager Thomas Tuchel on crutches this evening, seems to have hurt his leg. I just worry, Damien Delaney, that PSG may be limping out of this tournament. Oh, come on, did you not pick up on that?
Yeah.
That's all I got for you. That's my best stuff right out the gate.
No, I was just watching sorry, that was a great job.
I literally stole it from you. Damien Denning literally cracked that one during the 9 o'clock news.
And it was so bad I did it off air, but you usually do it on air.
I wanted to see your reaction if I did it on air. He's got to have done a serious job in it. He's got a big old boot on.
I saw him getting off the plane yesterday or today. He's struggling, but look, so is his team, to be honest. And, you know, Neymar at the
moment. Nice segue. You're becoming a pro at this.
Yeah.
Very tired.
But look, Neymar at the minute looks like their only hope.
He has been good, hasn't he, Neymar? he gets a lot of stick and he's much maligned and there's a sense he's made the wrong decision going to PSG. But this evening, he's been really sharp.
But look, ultimately, he's been bought for nights like tonight. You know, not for trebles in France or any of that carry on. It's tonight. it's Cristiano Ronaldo scoring two goals when they're not at their best or things aren't going their way, or, you know, it's Lionel Messi picking the ball up and scoring a goal. That's what they've bought, and that's what they're going to expect tonight.
Your voice is going.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I just think we should explain to the listeners, Damien's health is fine. I mean, the cardinal mistake of going outside and getting a tracker bar.
I mean, I thought we were on longer adverts.
Yeah, and that that is a bitty bar.
Running back as well.
Yeah, I would be going for a more solid chocolate.
I thought we had a good break, to be honest, but... So
wash that down.
Enjoy for tough shit here, you know?
Atalanta won PSG 0. So Neymar's been good, and just, you know, he's had a couple of chances, hasn't had his shooting boots on. We're sort of rooting for Atalanta, fresh from the hell that was Bergamo for a long time, 17,000 dead. It was, you know, we did Rory Smith from the New York Times on earlier on. He was really good. Fantastic piece in the New York Times today, if you didn't get a chance to see it, where he talked to the mayor of Bergamo and got a real sense of what they had been through and what the team Atalanta means to the city. It's not great. Not great. It's not your best moment. Mike, back up. No. For God's sake.
I know, yeah. Anyway, I'm good to go.
Literally on the radio here. We're on national radio. Anyway, we're sort of rooting for Atalanta. They've been good.
Yeah, they have actually. They're a well-organised, well-disciplined side. And as I mentioned, they're battle-hardened. They're coming out of the Battle of Syria recently. That's clearly what PSG are lacking at the minute, that intensity of playing in tight spaces, the press that Atalanta are coming with. They're just lacking a little bit, but hopefully it'll come.
Your voice coming.
No, thanks.
Neymar's had all PSG's better chances, ironically. I mean, you could easily be saying, oh, if only that chance had fallen to Neymar. He's had a one-on-one in the first minute. And he intercepted a back pass, which was on his left foot. He didn't just miss both chances, he missed them wildly.
But that's what I'm talking about. That's that kind of sharpness that he normally would have, the confidence of defenders breathing down his neck. You can't replicate that in training. People swinging out of him, people hanging out of him, and just composing yourself and making the finish, because he's had two great opportunities and a shot from distance as well. But at the moment, he's the only one that seems anywhere near the required level.
Why can't you replicate it in training?
Because, I suppose, pressure. You know, these players will respond better to pressure of a knockout situation. I have to do something. very professional. But look, here's Mbappe. Hopefully he's fit.
Looks could kill Lojo. I don't know what it is, to be honest with you. Breathe.
Okay, we're going to take a short ad break. We're going to a little Heimlich manoeuvre on Damien. We're going to have Pat Nevin with us, so I can turn to Pat if needs be. We'll be back in one sec.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. We love the beautiful game more than Olivier Giroud loves the near post. Gamble responsibly. CWE.net.
Remember lying back, pillows on me bed late after, and looking at the top of my wardrobe, stacked with boxes of Morro bars, Batch Loaf, not the Heels. And butter's another thing. Over the last couple of years, I've gone back, because I wouldn't have tasted butter for about 15, 20 years. Yeah, bread. Bread was a big thing for me when I went over to England. I missed it. Vienna rolls.
Toast.
Oh, rings of pudding used to, sausages my ma used to, they used to be packed in the luggage compartment on a...
Surely they did sausages well.
Been right there.
English sausages would
be sausages. No, their Irish recipe, which is a nowhere near, is it?
I've had sausages of a, you know, Grim Stag Weekend over in the UK, and they've tasted okay, no?
If they're sausages in a Grim Stag Weekend, Joe, you want to be able to savour the sausage.
Ma bring back the batch, cut a big heel, open up, eat the heel, flip it over, go for the heel down the bottom, wrap it back up again, flip it back over, put it back in the bread bin, so nobody's aware of it until they dug down right at the end. Although there's something nice about toast, putting the butter, if a cold slab of butter on top and just watching it work its way across the toast slowly.
So true.
As God intended. No, just Vienna, it's that fresh bread, not going to the Super Queen, the bread coming out, breathe it in.
as God intended. Kenny Cunningham, what a man. Jamie Delaney's back. I have no idea if he can talk or not. He left the room, excused himself. Tracker bar, naive choice. Let that be a lesson
rookie
to
all mistake,
aspiring broadcasters. Yeah. Solid chocolate at worst, even though that sticks in the mouth a bit. So how are you feeling? You okay?
Yeah, absolutely fine. Yeah. I just had a glass of milk. Milk just helped to wash it down, you know. Sorry about that. And
it's all right. I accept your apology. Brian has texted in. He was talking about my joke at the start of the football season. Yeah. Damo has stitched you up there, Joe. That joke deserved better. He's done a Nick Faldo on you. A good teammate knows never to leave a teammate exposed.
I wasn't even listening to you.
Did you not catch it?
He wasn't listening, though. I was looking at Neymar was walking out of the tunnel, and I just thought how disinterested he was looking walking out of the tunnel.
I thought you had hung me out to dry.
No, I would always laugh at your jokes, Joe, 100%. Man, they're hilarious.
Oh my god. It's a giddy.
Considering I didn't even recognise your Virgin Sport one, like, that was like.
That was upsetting. That has lingered in my ego a touch, actually. There's no doubt about it. A year into us talking, right through the Six Nations, you watching the games, and then I think it was about April, and you said, You don't know the rugby, do you? It's like.
My missus clocked it as well.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you didn't even clock exactly. It. That's right, yeah.
Is that the fella you're on the radio with?
It's Grace.
And I actually said straight away, no. And then I went, because that Joe without glasses.
Black hair. Got black hair. Kind of annoying. Very funny. Very funny. Laughing at his jokes too. So we're back in the game here. 54 minutes in the clock. Neymar has just nutmegged an Atalanta player, and it was a joy to watch. It actually really is all Neymar tonight, isn't it?
It absolutely is, yeah. And this is his, you know, this is his stage. This is why he got paid all the money. And he needs to deliver for them.
28 years old now.
Yeah.
This is it, isn't it? If, you know, if Neymar wants to, for a brief time when Messi and Ronaldo saunter off in the next 2 or 3 years, if he wants to be best player in the world, who's next in line after Messi and Ronaldo?
Obviously Mbappe, who's got to be there or thereabouts, huh?
Is Mbappe better than Neymar these days? I don't see enough of the French league to
know. I think he's got a future ahead of him. I think Neymar's at his peak.
Yeah.
And I just can't help but think that if this ends poorly for him, he'd always look back and regret this.
Oh, it's a total failure.
Because I agree, the money's unbelievable, but he would have got like unbelievable money anywhere he went. If he stayed at Barcelona, I mean, if he sacrificed his career, but you know, his career at an elite level.
Trophy point of view.
Yeah, and just being a legend at a huge football club.
Because for a time it was Messi, Ronaldo, and Neymar was the incumbent. And you take this season, Lewandowski was the next best player in the world. He's had a ridiculous season. I'm just wondering if over the next 2-3 years, Neymar is ever going to blossom into, he's about the best player in the world now territory. Yeah. No, you're not so sure.
Do you know what? I'm gonna go out there, right? He's very, 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 very good. But I don't put him in the same bracket as the other two.
No, neither would I.
And I don't put him even in, like, I mean, at the top of the next bracket, if you know what I mean.
Okay, so who's at the top of the next bracket off the top of your head? Give me 2 or 3 names. Current form, current talent.
Current form? I mean, recently.
I don't just mean the last 5-6 weeks, but just the last 18 months.
You know, I think, you know, the likes of, a lot of midfield players don't get enough credit. A lot of centre-backs don't get enough credit for what they contribute.
I
just think people like Toni Kroos.
Yeah.
And Modric, you know, Varane, you know, you look at the successful teams that have won an awful lot in the last number of years. You know, obviously Cristiano Ronaldo was fantastic, and he scored the goals and he got all the highlights and everything, but...
Can I give you the names?
Go on.
Okay, so Messi obviously won it in 2019 Ballon d'Or. Van Dijk is second, then we have Mane, we had Salah, we have Mbappe, we had Alisson, we had Lewandowski, we had Riyad Mahrez, you forgot, you had a great season, Frankie de Jong, Raheem Sterling, Hazard, this was off Chelsea form, this is last year, De Bruyne, De Ligt, I'm actually waiting to get to our friend Neymar, Sergio Aguero, Firmino, Griezmann, maybe he was injured for much of that year, he's not even in the top 28, okay, but they're the other names, there's still a big gap with Ronaldo.
Kevin De Bruyne for me, you know, is there, thereabouts. Salah has been, you know, is in the next bracket, Van Dijk obviously, Varane, barring the Manchester City game last week, has been epic for Real Madrid. And I really like Toni Kroos and people like that, you know. So, you know, they're the guys who are influencing games. Neymar's fantastic, but he's not quite the same level as the other two. I think he's missed his opportunity. He should have went to a club that was an established kind of giant in Europe and won trophies with them and just gone on to have a legendary status for the rest of his life. But I suppose the argument we made that he went to PSG not just for the money, but he thought he could drag PSG into that bracket of elite teams in Europe. And he hasn't been able to do it.
No, he hasn't.
Yet.
Let's get over to Pan Heaven.
Ah, how you doing?
Good, good. I just messed about my camera there and it fell apart.
That's all right, that's all right. We've got Damien Delaney almost choke in studio, but he is in studio this evening. These are a sign of progress.
Literally choke, not figuratively.
Yeah. Are you watching much of Atalanta PSG this evening?
As I'm speaking to you, I'm just going to get it on my computer here. Yeah, watching it here, 1-0. I thought Atalanta was great in the first half. They're such a lively team. The high tempo is great with them. They're not giving PSG much space in that first half. Mm. And I had a whole bunch of chances even before they scored the first one. But I just caught the end of what you were talking about, Damien, about Neymar. And his first two chances he missed were unbelievable for his standard. It was incredible. But he, for all the fact that, you know, he has, for his talent, underperformed to some degree, he's still the danger, isn't he? Mm. I mean, he's still the danger for them.
The only danger at the minute, huh?
Yeah. And it's really surprised. I mean, I don't know if you watched Mbappe warming up at halftime.
No.
That's a guy who doesn't actually look fit. He's kind of doing that kind of walk as if he's got, you know, he should be walking in crutches, but he's probably faking it and he'll probably be okay for about half an hour or so. But it was really, really strange to see him starting there. He didn't look his usual sharp self. We'll see if he's got it at that pace, because his pace is a large part of why he's so brilliant.
Speak of the devil, I'm sure whatever feed you're watching will catch up. He is just coming on now on 58 minutes with PSG. 1-0 down. To round off the tail end of our conversation there, if you separate Ronaldo and Messi, and frankly they have separated themselves, who's at the top of the next tier and where is Neymar's place in that?
Well, for pure skill, if you're talking about that, you mean he's up there, you know, very close to them. But it's not about his pure skill, is it? It's about other things. It's about, you know, your influence and the effect that you've had in the big competitions. You know, and he's not done it to that level that he was expected to do. And it always seems kind of nearly, especially PSG. I mean, I've been to many, many times, and they've kind of nearly done it. And I was there with the United game and various other ones, and they just seemed to blow it. And this is perfect timing for them to blow it again, isn't it? Mm. This is roughly when they blow up. And you're kind of wanting, you know, when Messi steps forward in those big games, he tends to get them through. Ronaldo, for vast amount of times, he managed to get Madrid through. And Neymar, just not quite, isn't it? It's just not quite. And it's to take nothing away from him. Although you can't quite love him, really, the same. I remember spending a lot of time in Brazil for the World Cup. And, of course, you can't, I don't know if you know this, do you know you can't buy any other shirts in Brazil except Neymar's, the number 10 on it? If you want to buy a Brazilian shirt, there are no others. So you go to the shops and there's only 10 Neymar. Now, as you can tell, you know the number I was probably looking for when it was over there. No David Luiz number 4 shirts. And you couldn't get them anywhere. So he's madly, madly loved there. But in the rest of the world, he's not loved, is he? He's absolutely not loved. And the variety of reasons for that. Maybe not doing as well as you should have for the level of his ability. But on top of that as well, you know, the throwing himself about and diving just drives people nuts.
Mm. You are, I hate to do this live now, you're a touch more muffled than you usually are, Pat, for whatever reason. Maybe if there's...
wonder what that is.
Oh, that's a bit better, I think. A bit closer. Because there were moments where Neymar really threatened to be, establishing himself as someone who delivered in the big occasion. I'm thinking specifically of, it's probably that Barca-PSG game where in the last minute the ball rebounds to him and he hits the most delicious chip in when you think he's going to shoot and you think, oh, wow, this guy is, you know, making things happen at vital moments. And I don't know, do you lose some kind of competitive edge, Pat, when you go to France and you're playing in Ligue 1 every week and you can get away with a whole lot more?
If you go there and you're going to win the league every single year just about without actually having to try that hard, you are taking that step down. If you're going to try and push yourself to the very, very top and you want to be considered as the greatest player in the world, which I think he does expect to be considered in that level, it's kind of sadly, it isn't where you do it. It's not where you do it. He probably thought he could do it and on his own, and maybe with Mbappe as well, go to PSG and become that from the stable of France. But it's just shown that he's not been capable of doing it. I mean, it's not a disastrous career. We're not talking the guy down. He's not hopeless, you know. But you're talking a rarefied atmosphere.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be, you're talked about in that level. And if you think about it this year, would you have considered him as, you know, the, you know, up in the running for the World Player of the Year or anything. No, you wouldn't have. You'd have put Lewandowski and people like that before him as well. And it just shows you that, you know, for all he's done, for all his talent, for all his skill, you know, you will always have that question. Every player knows. If you really want, if that's your thing, you want to be noted worldwide, you go to the biggest leagues. And that's where you stay. Mm. And that's where you make your name. And that's where you win trophies.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on this game. A few other bits and bobs to talk to you about. We'll see if Mbappe can make an impact. 62 minutes gone. Atalanta won at PSG. Now, on Atalanta, before I move off to the other games, Pat, I think it's fair to say the neutrals are pretty much on their side. They were a fairy tale story to begin with. And then the residual memory we all have of Bergamo over the last couple of months will probably stay with people for a long time. So I suspect most watching this evening are big Atalanta fans.
I think so, because you know, the attack-minded way that they play the football. I think the number of teams in Italy have just looked at it differently this season. If you look at the number of goals scored in Italy in the league this season, it's the most ever, I think, in the Italian Serie A. You know, they've just decided, right, okay, all that history out the window. The way you win things is go and score goals and attack. And Atalanta certainly at the forefront of that. You can run that up and at them style. But also the bravery on the ball, you know, the way that they actually always want to take the ball. Every single player knows that team. And it should be a given, but it's not. I mean, I was doing a game the other night, the Wolves game against Sevilla, and the Wolves players didn't all want the ball. You know, there's a jump in class. But you look at that Atalanta team, and boy, they all want the ball. They're all available. They're all looking for it. They're all helping their mates. They're all taking it in dangerous and difficult positions because they believe in themselves. That's partly down to their ability and partly down to what the coach is asking them to do. And then on top of that, they're just not one of the huge, big, great names. Sticking to the very top of that, the fact that slightly unfashionable and what they've gone through recently has been kind of horrendous. And I heard a story recently about their ultras, and it almost physically hurts me to say something positive about ultras usually in Italy. But in actual fact, they've been brilliant. The money that they put in to set up field hospitals and hospitals during the COVID crisis up there, it was absolutely phenomenal. So well done then, and well done that whole part of the world, because they are kind of sort of between Verona and Milan, it's kind of second class citizen sort of thing. But it's great news. It's great to see somebody challenging up there.
You mentioned Wolves Sevilla. I know, Damien, you were watching that game as well. If Raul Jimenez scores that penalty in 11 minutes, then they have something to hang on for, and maybe that gives them just an extra bit of something. So that was a bad moment for them. On penalties generally, the Jimenez stutter, and he scored his previous 8, so I can't just, you know, say he's a bad penalty taker, but it was notable that Bruno Fernandes the night before didn't have his usual stutter. And it struck me, Jimenez had scored a penalty just a couple of nights before. Goalkeepers will do their homework. If you're always expecting the stutter, it loses some of its effect. And also, I just don't like it. There's something old school in me that looks at it and thinks, this is self-distracting in some way. More can go wrong.
The best thing about that, and I don't know if other people have said it, is if you watch the goalkeeper, he fakes to go to his right, and that's what he catches him with. So if you watch that back again, he takes a step and looks like you're going to his right, which is what Jimenez is waiting for. Jimenez said, oh, keeper's going to his right, I'll just casually slot it the other side. The keeper's kind of double-bluffed him, really, or whatever you want to call it. Like, but if you watch it, it's ever so subtly, he does throw his body that way, and I think that's when Jimenez said, that's my chance. And that's why he only just barely put any pace on it, you know. Okay. And fair play to the goalkeeper. I mean, absolutely brilliant.
That's genius.
It is, yeah.
He knows the stutter's coming, so I'm going to
throw a shape, and I'm going to go one way and tell him, oh, I've gone early for his thing, but I'm going to go the other way.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he saved it.
I hadn't spotted that, actually.
Yeah, if you watch it back, you can just see it ever so slightly.
The opposite argument, don't you?
Huh?
I'm going to make the opposite argument.
Right. And before you do, because invariably, what's going to happen now, Pat, that I brought up penalties with you is, someone's going to text in and say, have you ever seen Pat Nevin's penalty? It's on YouTube. Or have you ever asked Pat Nevin about his absolutely rubbish penalty? We have, several times over, I would think.
And I've told this story too many times. So it's rubbish, it's garbage.
Yeah.
All the ones I scored aren't on YouTube, but that one is. Anyway, the lovely thing is, I think we're in this amazing era, as we know, you know, they talk about the likes. Willian's penalties recently have been absolutely brilliant. We know the ones that Hazard was taking. I'm just talking about the Chelsea players just now. But you look at some of the penalties that some of those players are playing, and Jorginho's penalties are just off the scale. I mean, he's still never missed a penalty in open play. He's like, in a normal time. And it's an amazing statistic for a guy who takes penalties. So that's great. So those stutters and these ideas work. And even when they miss one, that's fine. because everybody will miss penalties. Even the best penalty kick takers miss penalties. But you're right, it's an arms race. You know, it's an arms race for the goalkeepers. And I agree with Damien there. The keeper's done him in that case. But when I was watching him, he didn't really do the same style, did he? He didn't do his own thing. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at his face before, and he's trying to read as much as you can. He looked really nervous before that one. He looked as if he didn't believe in it before that one. So as soon as you have such lack of belief, you can't take that kind of penalty. Mm. I mean, it's not on. The guy playing last night at Campos, he never got a chance. He scored the goal. But his penalty taken, if he got a chance, have a look at his. His is another one again. Do you know the no eyes one? Now, this is mental no eyes. This is all over the place. His eyes are up somewhere up looking at kind of the floodlights or something when he hits it. It's really funny. He's not, again, not my favourite player, but he's done really well for them. So, you know, when you miss two or three of them, fair enough. But at the moment, it's still him and Edge. You need to stick by him. One missing nine,
yeah.
Those numbers aren't bad.
So if I was to follow your logic through there to its conclusion, might you say to Jimenez, if you are, for whatever reason, not feeling so confident, pressure of the moment, or you're just not going through good form, then maybe go with a more conventional penalty, because you need a certain swagger to pull off what you're trying to do?
Yeah, try to say that to a centre forward.
But I think you'd always, I won't say you accept the penalty being missed if a guy's, you know, tried. Really, like, try to put it in the corner, keep it guesses the right way, goes early and gets a good hand on it, or you go power and you're unlucky, you know. But you've had but that type of stuff where Jimenez is just kind of tiptoeing up to it and then floats one. I mean, they look great when they go in and you're a genius, but like, you're kind of stacking the odds against you there.
The misses look terrible, and absolutely, that's not the right way to judge it. I mean, you should only judge it on statistics, but I guarantee you, with that miss last night, as opposed to someone who just runs up and thumps it and misses. Mm. It'll linger in the memory as, oh, your man made a mess of it. You know, with his story.
Can I jump in and say how right you are? Because actually, my penalty record's quite good. But I had one ultra stinker,
yeah,
and it was on telly, and it was like said to be a terrible penalty, and correctly so. And that's it. So it's not that you're necessarily bad. If you have one or two of them, you are absolutely stuffed. So you're right. It's not necessarily the numbers, yeah, that stick in people's mind. Yes. And managers get irate, and your teammates get irate when it doesn't work like that, particularly if it's an important penalty. And that one was, by the way, I don't think it would have made a difference. I think Wills were off miles, yeah, away.
Sevilla were well on top throughout that game. I couldn't quite work out. People were saying, well, Wolves are tired. It's their 59th game of the season. They were just looking that bit leggy, and Sevilla were fresh. But it seemed like Sevilla had an extra man everywhere. I don't know, was that a tactical thing or?
I think from what I saw of the game, Sevilla obviously retain the ball so well,
yeah,
and they don't just keep, they go into pockets, back out of pockets, they go wide and they move you around. And the problem you have is when Wolves win the ball back, they've just spent 30 seconds chasing it in the heat, and all of a sudden when the guy who has the ball, he might not necessarily have the same options that he would have if they were fresh, because the guys who should be making angles for him are working hard, a 15-yard sprint to get into a pocket to create space for somebody else or to take the ball themselves. That wasn't happening. So every time one of the Wolves players got the ball, there seemed to be a lack of options, or the guy who had it was tired, or he wasn't having enough. That's why a lot of it then was just shelled over the top for Traore, because it was just like, oh, I don't really want to give the ball away here for these guys, it's going to be chasing it again. But look, that's what happens in Europe. I think they genuinely just came up against a better side, a fantastic footballing side with a fantastic ability to move you around and kind of mentally wear you down as well as physically.
Yeah.
I think we were slightly stuffed as well. They've very rarely played 3-5-2 this year. They've mostly played the 3-4-3. They went 3-5-2 this one. And it's a classic one. Similar thing happens when you've got a big 6-4 in centre forward. You lump it to them. And if you've got somebody who's lightning quick, well, you lump it in behind. You stop playing the football you're good at. And you're right, it looks as if they're an extra player. And they're a decent team, Sevilla. But Neves and Matinho, they just didn't look as if they had the legs. And if you've been outpassed and outplayed in that midfield area, you're kind of stuffed. And it was a bit of a shame, because it was about 75% possession against them. And they just looked absolutely punchless. So, you know, but they've done well to get this far. It's to take nothing away from Wolves. But I still would say, I don't think Manchester United should over worry. I think they should definitely win that game against Sevilla. Just looking at their strikers, I don't think there's the real quality there in comparison to what United have got.
I was... covering the game, working here on TV, and Brian Kerr was in, Pat, and he was looking ahead to the United game as well. One of the aspects of the Wolves' performance is that the likes of Navas, to a lesser extent, and certainly Sergio Reguilón, at the two fullbacks. They were able to bomb forward and they were so on the front foot and they were extra men. And Brian was making the point that, well, Manchester United, be it Rashford or Martial or Greenwood, whatever combination he wants to go with, will make damn sure to do more of a job on those fullbacks. And then he felt United's middle three would take care of midfield in better fashion. And he was leaning that way. He feels that as good as Sevilla looked, United should be okay.
Yeah, I absolutely felt that. I mean, you look where the strengths of their team were. Drogheda was brilliant. I mean, he was the best. I mean, Trey's restrictions at, I mean, he was never a left back there. He just spent his entire time at left wing.
Yeah.
And he hammered their time in the game. But it was a good tactic because the guy Campos, I was telling you about, he usually plays on the left. He'd moved in, created a whole lot of space. And we all know if you play a three, allegedly, at the back, we all know where the gap's going to be. And they just hammered into that gap, into that area. And boy, he was getting caught between it. And it just caused him problems all night. He kept on doing the switch ball. So it was obvious where the problem was, but it didn't seem as if Nuno could do anything about it. But you're right, I agree again with Damien. They were a better team. They were holding the ball better. And to be honest, every now and again, there's a player that you like to watch, like Benega. You don't get to see that many players playing, especially not in Bryn. And he was just brilliant fun to watch. Mm. And I have no idea what position he was playing. He's picking the ball up every single part of the field. He was quarterback, and he was... I don't think Benega would be able to do that against Manchester United. He's not got the legs to do it against them.
Mm. Damien, half chance there for PSG?
Yeah, Mbappe just turning on the afterburners on the left wing and cutting in, and he was so quick. He actually came in long square and almost, you could call it a one-on-one really, and he went for power. Keeper saved it with his legs, but God, the way he took off there, I'm not sure he didn't look injured. I mean, he hasn't done much. He's kind of walked around a little bit and but he's just absolutely turning the afterburners there with his pace. And it's a good chance, but I suppose, you know, it wasn't the clearest cut chance, but it was a decent effort. I agree with Pat there. You know, 3-5-2 for me is a possession-based system, because if you don't have possession playing 3-5-2, your two wing-backs are going to get taken to the cleaners, because if you are constantly giving the ball away and Matt Doherty is going to have 2v1 and... midfield players will drift out there, create overloads, and then Boley ends up getting dragged out to help him, or Neves and Moutinho has to go over, and all of a sudden you get out of shape very, very, very quickly. I think if you play that system, you have to retain the ball and retain it long enough to allow your fullbacks to go from the 5-3-2, which it will be, when it goes into the midfield, they need to get two or three passes to allow your wing-backs make 50 yards up the pitch, you know, not sprinting, but we're getting a move on, and then you create your own attacks. But if you keep turning it over, as Pat mentioned, you're short, wide, and that's the weak spot. And Wolves didn't keep the ball well enough last night, and every time I played 3-5-2, if you don't keep the ball, you will get exposed.
Right, okay. 15 minutes to go, by the way, Atalanta 1, PSG 0, if you're just tuning in. Mbappe has come on the pitch. We're here with Damien Delaney and Pat Nevin. Pat, we're in the midst of all these games. There's huge amount going on. It's hard to know what day it is. So take your pick from the last couple of days. Bayern Munich looked to be in serious form. Chelsea found that out once again. Barcelona came through against Napoli. There were, I would say nobody was blown away by the performance, but when there's Messi, there's a chance. And then, of course, there was Real Madrid and Man City. So where do you want to start? What are your overall impressions of where we are?
You could so much to cover and all that sort of stuff. I mean, first of all, Real Madrid, that is such a disappointment, but to be negative just for a moment, Varane made a number of mistakes during that game, right? And we know he's a quality player, but he did one thing that was absolutely dreadful and shocked me. He didn't want the ball after a while. And if you've got a team that's trying to play out for the back, he started hiding behind players, and you're thinking, wait a minute, you're 100 million quid, you are now the most important defender in that team, and he didn't want the ball, and just that was awful to watch. That he was shot, confidence was shot. But you know, City, look, I mean, really enjoyed it. I'll be covering the Lyon game with City. I'm really hopeful for City this time. I'm really, really hopeful. I'm not saying they will win it. I don't necessarily think they're the best team, but now that we've got to this situation where it's knockout games, absolutely they've got a chance, and it'd be nice if they had Aguero back on it. I just don't know about the Bayern one. They did look brilliant against Chelsea, but it really was a second string Chelsea, and it was a bunch of kids, and it was just far too much for them. I don't know how much you can read out of it. They are a really good team. They've got some fantastic players. Gnabry is a great player as well. By the way, I'm about 30 seconds behind you, so you've just seen a save, yeah.
Yeah, Neymar again with a chance. I mean, they're getting, that was a very scorable chance. He's 14 yards from goal and has enough time to set himself, and there's not much in the shot. He's trying to curl it around the keeper, and it's rolled at the keeper, but it's ominous-ish. That's two decent chances now in kind of 4 or 5 minutes. Sorry, you were on Munich.
But the brilliant thing, I mean, I am loving watching Munich. And the other thing about Munich is what was really obvious the game against Chelsea. Chelsea sort of fought back to get to 2-1. And you thought, right, OK, actually, a bit lack of embarrassment here for Chelsea if they get a draw out of this. And they did what really good teams do. It just went through a couple of gears. And it was amazing the way they just tore through the gears and sliced Chelsea apart. So the quality they've got there is fantastic. And Lewandowski just now, it's honestly, help me out, Damien. Has he got a weakness?
Absolutely.
Did he have bad breath or something? Because I have not found a weakness yet. He's absolutely unbelievable.
He's brilliant. And look, we can talk about all the top teams, Bayern and all that, like, but I think it could be a year for a Lyon or an Atalanta. I know I'm just playing a little bit different, but I hope it is. Or, you know, Atalanta look really good if they can get this over the line here 13 minutes in.
Because it's one-legged and it's a strange
exactly
setup.
And, you know, some teams are looking for fitness, some teams aren't. Bayern have been off for a while. You wouldn't call the Chelsea game the most sternest of tests, but, you know, some teams are going to build momentum. It's almost, you know, inevitable that some teams will not play as well as they should do.
The criticism of, to put Pat's point to you on City, the criticism of City would be, well, Aguero seems unlikely to make it back and Jesus isn't in his tier, to use that word we've been using. And there just still is a vulnerability at the back. You, if you're going into a game with City, you will fancy getting a goal or two.
Absolutely. I think I fancy Bayern, you know, I really do. I think they're just such a... They have a way of winning games of football. They're used to winning. They're a team full of winners. They're a football club. They're full of winners. So if it's not a Lyon or an Atalanta, because I want that fairy tale story, I would like it to be Bayern. And I think they have the personalities. They have the swagger, I suppose, really, of a team that belongs at the top of the tree. And I think they're just going to roll into this. And you know that once they get going, they got the top goal scorer in Europe or thereabouts. In Lewandowski, they got a real good cast around him, and as I said, they're a bunch of winners. So I think if it's not going to be an Atalanta or Lyon, which I hope it is, then I think it does look like Bayern, because here comes Mbappe, another shot on goal from the edge of the box, half a chance. You know, I think PSG will probably go out tonight, but even if they went through, would you fancy them beating the Bayern? Probably not. You know,
Pat, do you think, you're hopeful for City? What about the reservations people have? I mean, beaten 9 times in the league this year shows they're very catchable.
Yeah, I actually don't know if they're the very best they've ever been, but you don't. That's not what it's about. And you've got the season where you've got one-off games. Oddly enough, this is the time that actually probably suits Manchester City more than ever before. Here's an odd thing. This is never, ever going to happen. You'll just get ready to watch.
Mbappe has just gone through one-on-one and he just hesitated, and Toloi, the defender, has come in with one of the most brilliant tackles I've seen, just out of absolutely nowhere, just blocked the shot. Oh, he just hesitated slightly. Sorry, Pat, for cutting across you, but
I'm 30 seconds behind you, and he's had another chance just before that as well.
Yeah, I don't know how many chances they need tonight.
But I'm watching a variety of teams coming through here and thinking, looking at City, it suits them. But the other thing I was thinking, and I know it's never ever going to happen, I would love this to happen 1 year with a Champions League with the fans in. It was just one games. And you get to this point, almost festival football stuff. I'm loving it. I'm loving the fact that it's just this knockout and it feels real in a different way. Now, I know it's a different competition, but sometimes Champions League games go to two legs. You know, they can almost be interminable. I love the fact that when you get in knockouts, I think your Atalantas and your Lyons get more of a chance when you get this. And that's why I kind of quite like to see it. It'll never happen for one reason, and we know the reason.
Yeah. And Pat, the away goals is out the window as well, you know, so teams aren't worrying about that. And sometimes that could be an unfair way to go out of a tie. So I completely agree with you there. I think it's brilliant to see now Atalanta throwing all defenders and Paris Saint-Germain throwing on all their attackers. And it just seems the flow of the game goes and it just becomes a who can hang on the longest.
Yeah.
It's just a fantastic open cup tie when you go for it. Now, this has happened. This has been a really exciting game, this game we're watching tonight, because it's a one-off cup tie and there's nobody there. Now, you add the fans there to this, you know, and it's a neutral venue. It'd be fantastic. I know it's not going to happen. We know the finances. That's not the way it works. But I have to say, I've kind of enjoyed the way it's kind of went this, just apart from the lack of fans. The other thing about the Manchester City thing, just back to them again, I just kind of want them to win. I just like what they've tried to do over a period of time. And I know a lot of people don't like them because of the way they've spent the money. But I like the way they try and play football. And it's a gorgeous way they try and play football. And purely for the likes of De Bruyne and Silva, it would be great. Because you know what will happen? If they don't win it, everyone will say, oh, well, they were kind of second class and things, you know. But the day you win it, you are then put on the different pedestal, whether you deserve it or not. And I'd love to see that. And I think they kind of deserve it, what they've done over the last number of years.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's an absolutely vintage year. I don't know, like you said, even City may not be at their best and they're right in this thing. I don't know, is the 2020 winner, it won't go down as an all-time great team, I wouldn't think.
I would agree, sometimes happens. I watched, you know, again, I watched Chelsea go Manchester United over in Moscow, and I was there. Chelsea team that got beat there were not in the league of the team that went to Bayern and won it there. They won the Champions League when they did. It's not always the best team. You need the right situation, the right luck, you know, everything to go. That's why the cup games are great, and that's why you sometimes remember the finals, because if they do go for it in that sort of way. So it might not be a vintage year, but is that important?
Not really, no. You want the excitement, you want the knockout, you want the drama. That's kind of what it's all about. And on Real Madrid, Damien, so the way they were caught with City pressing, it was almost as if City started pressing them and then realised, oh my God, we can really press them here. Explain to me how Real Madrid, who must have been feeling relatively okay about themselves after winning the league, come out in a Champions League tie like that and get caught at the back so, you know, kind of flat-footed and ponderous is the word I'm looking for. Like, in the face of being pressed high, just ponderous.
They're just, you know, we watched and spoke about Real Madrid a lot on this show. They're a team on the wane, and there's a couple of players there that have kind of definitely gone over the top there and on the way down. They're not quite as sharp as what they are. They're not quite as focused potentially as what they are, and they're not the same team as what they used to be. And Real Madrid of old would have figured out a way with this high press. They probably would have just went over the top to Ronaldo or Benzema, you know, but that's a team that's hungry, a team that has real good leadership in it. They just figure out a way on the pitch. Whatever's being thrown at them, they can adjust, they can figure it out, and they'll get it over the line. When a team's kind of lagging and it's kind of coming to the end for this group and there was a big rebuild needed there, they just kind of got caught in a trap and they couldn't get out of it. They probably didn't have the motivation, the top players, the Toni Kroos's that could, you know, possibly back in the day play through that press. No problem. You want to go full press? Well, you've signed your own death warrant there, because I'm going to take it in the tightest of situations, get out of it and get a pass off, and we're going to catch you. And it won't be long before you stop sending all those bodies in, because every time we beat that press, you're going to sit off now. And they've kind of won that mental tactical battle. They're just not a team that were as good as what they were, unfortunately. I think that's just about it.
Unless there was some magic in the Pep press path that he knows the key to unlocking Madrid.
I love the fact that, you know, there's all these little stories in it, you know, that with Pep against Madrid, you know, the feeling there is there. He's, over the years, he's kind of done a number on them. But then, you know, Barcelona, much to the same way, to not to the same extent, I'm not sure, but then you remember, yeah, win the league this year, the La Liga this year, but much to the same way, we know Barca aren't as good a team as they were a number of years ago. You know, you have that period of time. And if you don't keep on, I mean, I'm looking at Real Madrid and Marcelo, fabulous, fabulous player. But would you much rather have a young, up-and-coming, fantastically lively left-back who's going to give you everything, and you've got 10 years worth of him getting better and better and better? We all love Modric, but he's got to that age now, hasn't he? He's not going to be able to do every single week at that sort of pace. And, you know, you've looked at Sergio Ramos, depending on him for such a long time as well. You're right, it's a whole group. And it's the easiest thing in the world to say, well, just replace them. Yeah, well, good luck with that. Because so many, they're brilliant players. And what they didn't have in the past is they always had, you can come to us kind of thing. You know, and they're that grab that everyone else had. Well, there's probably 5, 6, 7 now, you know, including Manchester United, including Manchester City, you know, including, for a period there, PSG, that got that pull. But in Madrid, you go to them now, and if you fail there, you're going to get hammered.
Yeah. PSG have blown another chance, and on the bench, it's starting to have the feel of a group who are like, I can't believe it's one of those nights again. 4 minutes to go, so we'll see how this plays out. Atalanta, it really is incredible. 1-0 up in PSG. Just on the Gareth Bale situation, Damien, we'd Graham Souness on last week and he was saying that he thinks Bale, 31, and pulling in $600,000 a week, I mean, he's got plenty going for him, but he thinks he will hate himself. That was the phrase he used. He'll hate himself down the line, almost. This is a guy taking his youth for granted, and when it's gone, going to realise this brief window of your life is unique, and four more years and it's over. You're done. Bale has been painted in a certain way, and we were just chatting during the news, and you know, you're pretty sure there's probably going to, you know, there'll be two sides to this story. This isn't greedy, lazy, I'm going nowhere, I'm taking my money necessarily.
I think you can definitely, like, in my experience, when these situations have always played out, and they play out quite regularly, the player will always have a gripe, okay? Gareth Bale didn't just come in one morning and go, I'm not playing football anymore, and that's it, I'm down in tools. He probably went to them, or the club might possibly have tried to sell him.
Well, China was on the cards. Right, but him going to China is...
Right, but maybe he said, I've won four Champions Leagues. He's gone to the club and said, I've won four Champions Leagues. I've scored in the final. I've won La Ligas. Look, I'm kind of falling out of love with football a little bit. Let me go. Or maybe the club came to him and said, look, you know, we're moving on from you. We're going to sell you. And the deal fell through for whatever reason. The club wouldn't accept money. Then the player's going back into an environment that he thought he was leaving and he was happy to leave. And maybe he tried to force a move through and said to the club, look, I'm going to down tools, sell me. And the club said, no, you're staying. Mm. And all of a sudden now, there's so much more going on behind the scenes and what the optics from just looking from the outside where it looks like Gareth Bale has lost interest. Graham Souness does make a good point. But the guy's 31, sometimes maybe just thinks I've had enough football. I've won everything, I've done everything I have. I've more money than I could ever spend. I want to go to China, I want to go back to the Premier League, or I just want to retire and play golf, one or the other. But until you know the full story, what went on behind the scenes, these situations are never as straightforward as what they look from the outside. The player will always have a gripe or feel hard done by. Now everyone can say, for $600,000 a week, you should put that to one side.
You should be a professional. I mean, a lot of people do jobs they don't necessarily love.
Maybe the club didn't behave in a professional way towards him. That's what I'm saying to you, is where the disconnect will come. Mm. Because if the club treated him poorly in so far as there was a deal gone through and he was on a flight to China or he was, you know, somewhere on the way somewhere, and then the club went, nah, hang on a minute, we're pulling the plug out, and Gareth Bale's got to go back and he's hang on a minute, I've said my goodbyes, I wanted to leave, we were all on the same page, and you've pulled the plug for whatever reason. So,
Would your reply to that now not be, Gareth, build a bridge? Like, get over it and start playing again. Be a professional.
Because if he goes back and starts playing again, he's going to stay in Real Madrid. So maybe he says, I'm definitely leaving this summer. And if I try this year, they're not going to sell me either because they'll know that I'm the type of player that will, you know, get my stuff together and put in a shift for the team. He's just rubber stamping his exit this summer.
Pat Nevin, you're about to see a goal and it's gone the way of PSG. 90 minutes on the clock, Atalanta 1, PSG 1. And after all the carving open of Atalanta and chances, it's just kind of a scrappy little ball knocking around, scuffle into the box. And so suddenly it is 1-1. Atalanta 1, PSG, Pat.
And they've made a whole bunch of changes, haven't they, Atalanta as well? So they've went more defensively. So if they're going to go into extra time just now, probably. And they're in a difficult situation because they're up against it. They've now set up their stall to defend. They fell really far back, haven't they, in the last 15 minutes or so. They fell so far back, the chances are slowly but surely been coming. They've got a little bit lucky there, haven't they?
They sure have. Just the nick of time.
They've had enough of the play to deserve it, though. Mm. You know, in the last 20 minutes, they've had enough of the play to deserve it. So, you know, Atalanta was just trying to see it out. They were being very un-Atalanta at that point in time. And they're the ones that are kicking themselves. Talking about Gareth Bale kicking himself. They'll be kicking themselves. If they could have maybe kept it up, he kept on pushing. But if you've got, you know, the likes of Mbappe coming on with his pace, the most natural thing in the world for any defender to do is stand for 10, 15 yards but further back. And the rest of the team falls back with you. And it may well be that that's actually what his one or two runs that he's had and also his presence has been enough. And of course, are we giving Neymar an assist for that?
Give him an assist.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Pat, you've about a minute and a half here to give us your summary of the Bale situation.
I'm a wee bit older school. Go and get a game of football. Really, you've got all the money in the world. It almost feels like you're saying you didn't treat me with respect. And as soon as I hear that sort of phrase or that sort of feeling, I've lost all feeling for the player. It's not about respect. You're going out and doing your job and doing it as well as you possibly could. And if you can't do it there, try and get it organised that you can do it somewhere else. They will let you go They will let him go. They want him to go. And as long as they do a deal with him. Now, if they won't do any deal with him, fair enough, sit there. But be open about it. Tell people what's going on. Mm. I'm dead disappointed. And from the biggest reason I'm disappointed is the guy's brilliant. The yeah. guy's absolutely fantastic. And he's doing us out of their pleasure.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Pat.
PSG 2, Atalanta 1.
Neymar, what a through ball. Oh my God.
They carved them open that
Neymar,
time.
Neymar's creeping up that list that we were talking about earlier.
They carved them open that time. Oh, that is so cruel.
Hey, listen, fair play to them.
I'm
kind of happy.
So cruel.
I'm kind of happy.
They pushed it forward, haven't they, Atalanta? They've tried to, once they lost the goal, they pushed about six or seven players further forward, and there was space for them, you know, for PSG to break into. His dummy to go inside there was absolutely magnificent, Neymar, honestly, the first piece of play there. But they've outnumbered them. They've lost the structure, didn't they, there? Yeah. Atalanta. What a ball, there.
Oh, there's no fairy tales. There's no fairy tales. Pat, we're right out of time. Thanks, Emil.
Pleasure. See
Cheers.
You soon.
Thanks so much.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. We love the beautiful game more than Olivier Giroud loves the near post. Gamble responsibly. CWE.net.
Oh, Bergamo this evening could have been amazing. Instead, they're celebrating in the Middle East. It is PSG 2, Atalanta 1. It's about to go full time, give or take. You might remember a few weeks back we had Mila Murhurtig and Jim Gavin hosting a special quiz. It was all in aid of the Dublin Neurological Institute at the Mater Hospital. There were some brilliant prizes for anyone who donated. The draw took place today. Third prize, €250 Dunstores vouchers, goes to Killian Conlon. Second prize, All-Ireland final tickets, overnight stay, including breakfast at the Intercontinental Hotel on the night of the final, goes to Thomas Rogers. Thomas, enjoy. And first prize of a training session with Jim Gavin, including jerseys, bibs, footballs and cones provided by O'Neill's, goes to On Tucker GAA Club in Wicklow. So congrats to you. Enjoy that. That's a brilliant prize. OTBM coming at you tomorrow as usual. 7:30. I'm sure they'll have more on the Cyrus Christie story they broke this morning. 7:00, John Giles will be talking about the European action. And Jordan Larmour as well, talking to Will O'Callaghan, coming your way. We have about 30 seconds here, Damien. Do you want to sum up this evening? Money wins.
Yeah, but look, PSG started pretty poorly and took a while to find the rhythm and get into it. But my God, Neymar's been good tonight.
They were the better team on balance.
They were, especially in the second half. They really took it. And Neymar's been brilliant all night. I know I said that I didn't put him in the same bracket. I still probably don't. But listen, he did exactly what they bought him for tonight.
Yeah, he did more of that.
He was the main man. And he gave him assist in the equaliser. And he was fantastic.
We'll let you go and finish your tracker bar. Thanks very much.
Finally.
That was Damien Delaney, who's still with us, thankfully. And Tom Dunn is on the way next. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. As potent as Rashford and Fernandes. Post-lockdown. Gamble responsibly. CWE.net.
Missing this?
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.